What do the words high school make you think about? Cramming for standardized tests? Track team, band, or chess club? Fooling around and getting high? For each of us, high school was many things, but represents a smaller group of things in our own mental model of its place in our lives. Outside of our personal impressions, though, our school experience was the result of a set of philosophical and budget choices that guided the design of our educational experience. Our guest this week, Pam Pedersen, is going to give us a look into the leading edge of high school education today, part of our exploration into the future of learning. Pam is the principal of Innovations Early College High School in Salt Lake City, Utah. My name is Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My co-host is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 8 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. Let's get started. How do you best learn? I'm not asking that abstractly. I'm asking you, kind listener, about your own preferences and sense of paths to success. How do you best learn? For sake of example, I best learn when I find something interesting. It's a low bar. Once I find something interesting, I'm off. When I was younger, it was in books or microfilm. If you can imagine that, microfilm, in the library. Today, it is almost exclusively by using the internet, burrowing down hole after hole within the seemingly endless trove of available information. Now, that sounds simple on the surface, but it's more nuanced than that. For dysfunctions the origins of which I don't understand and are probably lost to history, my enthusiastic learning is restricted to when it is voluntarily chosen by me, not assigned by an authority figure. Through school and even into university, subjects and books I would ravenously consume if I discovered them over summer break became a painful chore when assigned by a teacher or a professor. My ability to learn successfully was most impacted by environment, not topic. To this day, I find pretty much anything interesting, a mere impulse away from losing a day, weekend, week, or month, taking a deep dive into it. Just so long, that is, as someone else didn't require me to do it. My own learning preferences are idiosyncratic to me. While certainly not unique, they are a product of my nature and nurture as much or more than they are a reflection of learning writ large. Yes, of course, we all are happier when we are doing things we choose to do, but that certainly need not impair the process and reality of actual learning. Your own strengths, weaknesses, preferences, and limitations are a reflection of both you specifically, learning in general, and the context of the life you live. Think about those not just in this episode of the show, where we take a look at what an innovator is doing in high school education, but start to get a sense of how you learn best as a tool that helps you in the future. A big part of our adaptation to automated environments and sharpening your ability to learn well will provide a fundamental advantage. Pam Pedersen is the principal of Innovations Early College High School in Salt Lake City, Utah. They are nationally recognized for their non-traditional educational approach, which we will learn about in some detail on this episode.
We are a choice school in Utah, which has a lot of similarities to a charter school. So we are part of our school district, but as a choice school, we have some differences in funding, and we actually probably have more computers than a lot of other schools do as well. Our school is 9 through 12, and some students start concurrent enrollment college classes second semester of their sophomore year, but we really are expecting students in general to start their 11th grade year if they're on that track.
Let's be clear. The high school education landscape here in the United States is a diverse tapestry, never mind if we consider the entire world. Innovations is privileged compared to most other schools, public or private. We're looking at Innovations as a leading edge example of what is going on as we more broadly consider the current and future of learning. But we want you to keep in mind that this is just one example of the on-the-ground reality of high school education today. With those caveats established, let's look at the basic structure of Innovations.
In our system, in our blended learning or flex model system, with the exposure to college classes really early on, and with exposure to our Canvas system, which is kind of the way that professors and students talk to each other and get lessons back and forth and turn things in, all of our universities and colleges, mostly in Utah, use Canvas, and our students learn that as well while they're in high school. So that's really helpful. Also, I think being self-directed and learning how to say, boy, I need to get these 10 things done today and how should I do it? They learn that really well here at Innovation. So I think to be a college student or to be an adult, they're much more ready and prepared.
Blended learning is a term that relates to a mix of online and offline learning. It is a hybrid between the traditional classroom and a theoretical digital-only environment. Pam mentioned Canvas, which is a learning management system, or LMS. This is the software portion driving the blended learning environment. Competitors to Canvas you may be familiar with include Saba, Absorb, and 360 Learning. The blended learning community has a mantra, one that is fully adopted at Innovations.
There's a lot of different kinds of learning that can happen. And the flex part of that means that students have some say in the time, space, pace, and place that they're doing their learning. Parents and students are very verbal and very outspoken about making sure those four tenets are kept in place and that students are able to take advantage of those things.
Time, space, pace, and place. It still struggles to roll off my tongue, but is at the core of the philosophy of a flex model. Rather than be forced into the rigid schedule of a school system, students have agency and input into the time, space, place, and pace of their education. This is more than a shift in how education happens, but in how parenthood and childhood happens. A far cry from the days of because mom said so, acknowledging children as people who have their own preferences and sense of self helps shift the child-adult role from one of conflict and defiance to one of cooperation. Like so many things about innovations, it doesn't work everywhere just yet, but it offers insight into a better way. As a parent who has intentionally moved away from authority exertion to a listen, consider, empathize, and respond model, I've seen the power that diffusing the hierarchy between adult and child can have. I also rather like the rhyming, time, space, pace, and place. Continuing with Pam, there are more things to be inspired about at Innovations.
A typical day is pretty flexible. You know, our school is based on a flex model of blended learning. Students have an opportunity to arrive at fairly flexible times. They have time with their mentor teacher in some various classrooms here at school. Many students go to concurrent enrollment college classes, and so they're kind of coming and going with their college schedule, and they're working on other high school requirements through the day. There is some limit to the flexibility. Students are supposed to be at school 6.5 hours a day, but when that kind of starts and ends is probably where the flexibility is. But again, some students we don't see very often because they're full-time college students, even though they're still in high school. So, and the flexibility of where they're working and the things they're working on, because they don't have bells, is probably what is more noticeable to people coming in.
Now, this is an entirely different world than the late 1980s era Breakfast Club and Ferris Bueller's Day Off realities of high school that people of my vintage may remember. After all, if there is not a bell to signal at the end of class, there cannot be a subsequent bell mere minutes later to let you know that if you aren't already sitting down, you're going to be in trouble. All facetiousness aside, though, the idea of no bells and teachers as mentors instead of rule-keeping authority figures is a break from the mainstream. Certainly private schools, and the most progressive of public school systems, have defied these stereotypes over the years, but, dreaming for a moment, the idea that high school education could universally look more like the Innovations model and less like the Principal Rooney model is tantalizing. What does the job of a teacher look like in this environment?
Our teachers have an incredible opportunity. They mentor students from ninth grade through graduation. They get to be kind of part of the family, and they kind of oversee a whole educational and sometimes emotional experience for students and really, really impact their lives in a positive way. Teachers do see their mentee students in the morning in general and spend time having meetings with them, creating educational plans, checking on the students' progress through those plans. They do have curriculum that they're in charge of. I mean, they're a language arts teacher or a reading teacher or a science teacher. But instead of saying, I teach science, they say, I have mentee students that I help through high school. Mm. It's a very different mindset.
It is a different mindset. The word that comes to my mind is humane. A model where you have people making relationships, getting to know each other, investing in one another, collaborating across years, and having reciprocal impact on each other's lives. That sounds like a good community behaves. Over the years, I had a number of teachers I would say were excellent, who positively impacted my life, and I remember with fondness. But those were relationships of a few months or even a year. They are unnaturally limited in order to enable the processing of massive amounts of students. Still, while this model is so obviously better, we come back to questions of funding and of privilege. This can work for high-achieving students or highly motivated students. Intuitively, I believe that a number of people I went to public high school with, in a wealthy suburb no less, would flounder or fail in this looser model. So I guess the big question is, how can we make more optimal learning environments, which for some students would resemble innovations, while for others would be something very different, available? There are no easy answers in a world with limited budgets, rampant inequality, and a lack of centralized political will to change the status quo. Still, even at innovations, concessions need to be made to ensure the students comply with the overarching credit systems.
We do have a little more structured periods, especially math this year, where students are asked to go through math in a little more traditional way so that they absolutely get the concepts and can show how smart they are in really important ways like on the ACT.
For now, and certainly in the years, if not decades ahead, a formal higher education will remain the portal between high school and creative work. And that portal is controlled by measures like the ACT and SAT tests, success in which it is more about traditional discipline and repetition than exploratory methods. A focus for innovations is understanding how different subjects should be treated in defiance of more traditional models.
From what I can see us doing now, we're trying to fine-tune how students learn different things. I had a parent meeting last night and described to parents that if you're learning reading and writing, it's kind of a circular, repeating thing. You can kind of go back and forth into it and you can leave it for a while and come back and say, yeah, that novel or this character or this essay. And it's okay to take some time off. So the learning there is very different. Mm-hmm. I think with math and science, it's hard to take time off from math and not learn a lot of math in a very sequential, focused way. So I think we're going to get better about learning how to teach different things and to teach different students that need it in a different way so that everyone stays on top of things and can graduate on time and can reach their fullest potential.
This seems so fundamental, and yet hearing Pam talk about it, it also feels revolutionary. Different subjects are different not just in their content, but in the ways in which we successfully learn them. I do not remember a single quarter or semester of my education where I wasn't taking English and math in equal measure. Maybe I should have been doing 10 minutes of math a day, and having reading retreats each month that would last an entire week? I suggest this as an outsider who is ignorant of what truly optimal structures would be, but just the mere recognition that learning is not the monolithic thing that I experienced, even including stints in Montessori and country day schools, feels revolutionary. As a choice school, Innovations has access to various forms of funding or support that other types of schools or just different school systems don't have. I asked Pam how she might advise other schools or teachers who are inspired by what Innovations is doing if they want to be catalysts for change despite any of a number of systemic barriers to it.
Schools have gotten much better at having big computer labs and more technology and the ability for teachers to understand it and be able to help students learn in different ways. And I think to have a school within a school, which is kind of an old, that idea has been around for a long time. But to use school within a school, not maybe for kids who are having trouble, but for kids who need to go faster and who are ready to just soar off into like college and be our leaders of tomorrow. We have the ability already in our schools and we have the space, we have the people, and we obviously have the kids to make that possible, where kids can do more quickly and in a different way. It's not hard.
Pam merely waves her hand at the technology. The real kernel of impact here is about personalization, about breaking out of the one-size-fits-all reality of industrial schooling and helping children at the extremes find their own path. This would have been huge for me as a student. I can only dream of how my life might have changed if the learning institutions were able to cater to me with some degree of personal specificity. Next, Pam talks about how she, as a teacher, would have worked with a student like me to get the most out of the learning experience.
I think as a teacher, if I saw a kid, and I would, you know, if I was a teacher right now, if I saw a kid who was really interested, really excited, I would probably approach that one kid and say, hey, let's design a way for you to get through this whole year of curriculum as fast as you want. We're going to design some independent study projects. I'm going to give you some things to read. I'm going to give you websites to explore, and we're going to meet once a week. And you're going to tell me what you've learned, and you're going to get through this and have your full credit done. That's easy. We can do that.
Now, that sounds like senior project at my old country day school, but extrapolated across the entire high school experience. Coming back to technology, though, here's what the basic tech environment looks like for students at Innovations.
We have full classrooms of laptops and desktop computers in every room. We have projectors in every room. We have students have the ability to use a lot of other technology online that helps them to reach their goals. And pretty well kids are all walking around all day with their own laptops or school laptops. We have a really high-speed internet connection, and we have really good wireless. So kids are just spoiled. They just go all around our space and even outside of our space and get their work done.
As a technologist, not an educator, that seems like the minimum technology infrastructure that a school should have for their students. I can only imagine how humble the tech access must be at less wealthy schools and systems. Finally, let's get Pam's take on the emerging technologies she is most excited about for the future of education.
The whole 3D, putting a headset on your head and being somewhere else. I thought that if in some ways, especially with history and in a lot of subjects, even looking at like molecular models and things, that if kids could be in a space and explore spaces or explore those molecular models, that when they're learning about those things in other ways, that they would have a more powerful understanding of what it was. I gotta say this too. The whole Star Trek thing of let's project something even in the air right in front of you and use your hands to move the model and to make it larger or smaller or to explore something right there is, I think, would be incredible. I'm looking forward to that here at Innovations.
Thanks again to our guest, Pam Pedersen. So, John, how did our interview with Pam impact your thinking about the work we're doing with Creative Next?
You know, when I was listening to Pam talk about how they sort of tailor and, sort of artfully put together the curriculum for the students at Innovations High School, it brought to mind this picture of the teacher as a coach, right? So as an educational coach and as someone who was, in a very personalized way, providing a path for education, for the individual student. And so the way I think that's, you know, important to the work we're doing here at Creative Next is this idea of having this Sherpa or this person who is helping to direct you through all the information that's sort of we're deluged with, right? And as we're sort of dealing with emerging technologies in our various careers and jobs and tasks, education, you know, is of course critical to the way we're going to be able to manage work and manage these technologies in our lives. So I thought it was a very sort of telling role of this teacher slash coach, and she talked a bit about how she would design independent study projects or provide things for the students to read or websites to explore, or how she would potentially meet weekly with a student, putting together this coaching plan, right? And I can really see the need or the potential for that sort of role in the lives of sort of creative workers, tech workers, as we push forward into this emerging technologies, AI dominated economy. I think we're going to need more of that kind of coaching and teaching and focus on how we're able to, learn over time. I think it's going to be an essential role.
Yeah, Steven Anderson talked about mentorship as a key aspect of education as well. So there's a little bit of a theme developing there. Certainly coaching and mentoring is something that's been around for a long time, but maybe in the future, maybe part of the smartware future that we're heading into is one where those will be more common. It won't only be for top executives or you know, people who were going on a diet or had a bad visit at the doctor's office. You know, maybe the notion of mentors and coaches will be more prevalent, especially as there are people looking for work. Coaching is an option as automation takes away some of the more mundane and repeatable tasks. So there might be a sort of a convergence of need with opportunity.
Oh, I absolutely think so. Yeah, I think that's going to be, you know, the competitive landscape is going to be the, you know, whatever that creative workplace is, right? So that's the competitive landscape, and you're going to have your potentially your team of coaches, mentors, educators that are going to be providing you with the ammo to, you know, to excel in that competitive landscape.
Yeah, that's right. It, you know, for me, what sort of one of the ways Pam impacted my thinking about our work is really focusing and refocusing me back to thinking about the environment as opposed to the technology. And obviously for what they're doing in innovations, technology is important. Certainly for the things we're looking at, technology is crucial. But if you want to talk about why is innovations doing the things that they're doing, it's not just the technology. It's also that they have a different approach, a different mindset. The insight that her team identified that math and English should be taught in very different ways to be effective, like that's foundational and important. You can't just hook everybody up to the internet and watch magic happen. You have to also have some knowledge and a vision for how to apply that knowledge in order to get better results. And I think that's something that's going to prove true in all of the things that we're talking about. So that, you know, that seemed pretty important to me.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
John, what did Pam say that was the biggest surprise or new kernel of knowledge for you?
I think for me, her description of the flexibility in both the timing and curriculum of you know the work they're doing at Innovations High School. So she describes the day as being flexible, and actually, you know, talks about this flex model of blended learning. It's for me that is like night and day compared to my high school experience. So we were in at like, you know, whatever the start time was, and they opened the gates and everybody just like, you know, sort of goes into the hallways in this mass chaos of student arrival.
The cattle forces its way out of the...
Yeah. I mean, I remember waiting with my, you know, my buddies, you know, during sort of the winter, you know, in the sort of crammed in the hallway, everybody's, you know, getting ready for the day and chatting with friends and trying to, you know, be clever and have a little fun before the day begins. And then, you know, the bell rings and you're off to the races, right? So this is, and then when the bell rings per class, you're boom, moving to the next thing. So there's not, there's a regimented sort of, I mean, literally old school aspect to the way that I went through high school. And you know, so my college experience was a lot more flexible, and it's just interesting to me that this flexible model of learning is something that is practiced in a high school environment. It may not be a revelation to, you know, folks who have kids in high school right now who are practicing this model, but for me it was kind of a shock.
With an education like that, John, it's a wonder you're literate.
Oh, well, of course. How did I get there?
Yeah. You know, after the interview, I was doing research for the episode, and I learned that there were actually some budget controversies at Innovations prior to Pam taking over as principal. So what happened was the school used money that was intended more broadly for the entire school system just for their students to attend free community college classes over the summer. You know, it seemed like the whole situation was a misunderstanding as opposed to corruption, even though it was a scandal. And to be clear, Pam had nothing to do with it. It's not at all connected to anything that she's doing. But it was a reminder that it's easy to get enthusiastic about the progress of and really opportunities for the best students, for those who are achieving, to help them fly higher. But to the point that it can directly and demonstrably harm those without the privilege. This examples at innovations where money intended for all was channeled into these privileged few already at innovations to get more. But that can happen also in places that are closer to home for all of us, you know. And it was, you know, even in this, you know, sort of a best practice example of what a school like this, a choice school in Utah, can do and can be, there's the, you know, the potential to go haywire and leave some other people perhaps inadvertently behind. So that sort of surprised me and really reminded me to be vigilant too in other ways around technology and the future and how these things are going.
Yeah, it all costs quite a bit to fund. So funding is definitely sort of an ongoing question when it comes to how do we up-level everybody.
John, what did you learn from Pam that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
Yeah, one of the things that I keyed in on, sort of based on that interview, was really, you know, thinking about how, you know, what my own boys are interested in, and sort of, you know, in terms of their direction for their learning, and that identifying, you know, what they want to study might be as important as what the schools want them to study, and what maybe I would like them to study. So I know one of my sons is into drumming, right? And of course, I'm a piano player. So one of the things that I'm trying to reconcile is just my sort of vast knowledge of, you know, I played drums, I've played other instruments, and just, you know, sort of what I think is best foundationally for him and what he's really into, which is, you know, at the breakfast table, he's drumming at the breakfast table, on the table. That's different from, you know, the piano, which is not in his eyes as fun, right?
Yeah.
So am I missing, like, having that awareness of how, you know, my children are learning, how I learn, what it means to be self-directed, and what it means to, you know, be interested in a topic versus being forced to take it on just because someone with more power and control than you tells you to.
Yeah, I mean, Richard Saul Wurman talks about that a lot, that people learn best through their interests. If you just turn them loose in their interests, they're going to learn more and learn better than sort of forcing them to play the piano, for example. You know, in terms of the interview with Pam influencing my life, I've got to admit, I'm having sort of an existential crisis about the education that my children are receiving. You know, you and I live actually in communities adjacent to each other, very similar, sort of suburban, you know, upper middle class communities. And I'm concerned that the school system, which I think is fairly traditional, is going to penalize them compared to students at places like Innovations, because the high school here is not behaving like the Innovations high school is. And it's behaving a lot closer to my high school education in the early 1990s. And that doesn't seem good. It doesn't seem good at all. But these things are complicated. You know, the kids, you know, they have friends, they wouldn't want to change schools. Frankly, my wife probably wouldn't want them to change schools. You know, how do you fix that? How do you address that? There may not be a way to address it. And I mean, I have in theory some ability to do so, but a lot of other people don't. Like, a lot of kids, mine included, yours included, are in this gauntlet of sort of outdated, outmoded, you know, ineffective, wrong-minded schools. And I've been feeling a little down about it, just in, you know, in reflecting on what's happening in Innovations.
You know, I understand the sentiment. I mean, Massachusetts does have very, very good schools compared to sort of the national landscape. So it's it may, and who knows, by the time our kids reach high school, there may be a lot more innovation style teaching, especially if, you know, if there's interest from the parents and, you know, sort of pushing in that direction. So, I mean, one thing to keep in mind is that at least in our area of Massachusetts, they are, you know, nationally sort of excellent schools compared to, you know, other areas of the country. So it's worth, you know, sort of improving them. And I would say, you know, we like what we see at Innovations. You know, there's no reason that can't help shape, you know, the future of schooling in the regions where we live.
I don't know, John. Public school systems are slow and bureaucratic, and I don't know, I think that their heads are turned in the wrong way. I mean, you know, we're recording this episode the Friday before the Super Bowl, and today in school, the whole school is having Patriots Day. Not Patriots in history and learning, but Patriots in professional football team going to play. And there wasn't an Ada Lovelace Day. There wasn't a Thomas Edison Day, but there is a Patriots Day. And I think that is it reflects misplaced priorities that sort of cascade through the entire learning condition. I don't know. I'm far, far more bearish than you.
Yeah, that's something I'm sure we'll return to in subsequent episodes as we're discussing the future of learning and creative next.
For each episode, we're going to finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, how do you best learn? Think about that for yourself and feel free to tweet at us about it at GoCreativeNext. Creative Next is sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation, a new kind of museum. They believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission, bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most, healthcare, education, and public service, to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at biff.is, that's biff.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter at GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish an article to extend and build upon each episode. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, whom you can reach at dniemeyer, that's dknemeyer, and my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett, that's jonfollett. Our guest this episode is Pam Pedersen. You can reach her via email at pam.pedersen@slcschools.org. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And of course, the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. Here's a clip of what you can expect to hear next time. We'll see you then.
The world isn't divided into physics in isolation from biology in most cases, or politics isolated from economics in all cases. The learning of discrete pieces of information isn't very much related to the way the world works. And it's also, by the way, not related to the way people think.